Welcome to ACS Law Talk, a podcast presented by the American Constitution Society. I'm Joseph Jerome, a law fellow here at ACS. In this episode, I speak with Minneapolis Mayor R.T. Rybak about his thoughts on gun violence and gun control. Each year in the United States, nearly 10,000 Americans lose their lives to gun violence. Another 15,000 use guns to commit suicide. And while firearms have been largely ignored on the national stage, mayors like Mr. Rybak are on the front lines attempting to craft common sense solutions to reduce violence, to track guns, and to help their citizens. As the mayor of Minneapolis, Minnesota, R.T. Rybak, he's a member of the organization Mayors Against Illegal Guns. And as mayor, he's worked tirelessly to implement the city's Blueprint for Action plan, which aims to help prevent youth violence. So, Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for joining me today.
I'm very happy to be here.
This is tragically has been a year of mass shootings, and unfortunately, Minneapolis was not immune to such violence, having experienced a mass shooting in September that ended in six dead. I was sort of wondering if you could describe Mayors Against Illegal Guns and your involvement with the organization to respond to gun violence.
Well, the debate in Washington about guns is very different than the reality of a mayor in a community involving violence. And my perspective on this, sadly, is from standing with a mother on a corner when her child is dead, being in a hospital with parents who had their 12-year-old daughter doing her homework at the kitchen table and a bullet went through the window and killed her. Being this morning at a high school and talking to kids about how to live in a safe community, going to a mass shooting involving people who I knew. And the reality of all of these things is that the debate and the discussion really needs to be brought back to that human level, because what we have right now is not acceptable, sustainable, or right or just.
Well, what sort of laws or efforts do you think could make a difference against gun violence? It's often claimed that we already have enough gun laws on the books. The problem is that we need to enforce them. So where do you think the law stands?
Well, as much as my responsibility as a mayor is to deal with the human experience, we also have laws, and it is incorrect to say that simply enforcing what's on the books is all we need to do. That's just not the case. And I'll give you an example. I stand on a corner with a mom whose kid is shot, and standing next to me are our police and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and the federal government, a very, very good organization. But that mother, and certainly I, demand to know where that gun came from. And our police can go out and do that investigation, but if that ATF official standing right next to them has their hands tied behind their back by laws made through the so-called Tehart Amendment in Washington, preventing federal officials from giving some information to people at a local level. Now, stop and think about that. Some congressman from Missouri is standing in between a mother and a community that demands to know where that gun came from. Isn't it wrong to be standing out in a community and see that there's information about where that gun came from and the ability to limit more, and some congressman from Missouri thinks they know better than that mother does? That is a law that needs to be changed.
I think part of the tragedy that this year has been the lack of national dialogue on this. Do you think, what are the prospects for seeing any sort of federal reform?
Well, I think one of the things that we do is we often throw up our hands and say, oh, gee, this is never going to happen, and that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I believe that we have to continue. One of the reasons I've been active in Mayors Against Illegal Handguns is that it has been able to bring the voices of some of these people who've been suffering in the communities forward and move us toward more prevention. So I think a couple things need to happen. One is we need to focus on where those changes need to be. The Tehart Amendment is one of several I would talk about. I also, frankly, as a mayor who has been at some horrible situations, I don't understand why assault weapons are needed by people who are hunting. I don't know what good, legitimate hunters need an assault weapon for. And that's not the case. The assault weapon is used too often in outgunning our own police. So that's an assault weapons ban. That's something that I happen to believe in. But I also believe this discussion and debate gets frozen because people talk about it only about the law. And there's a combination of law and values, because laws don't pull triggers. People do. and values are about that. And so what I also try to do is say it's not just a legal approach. It is about really trying to do what I did this morning at a high school where I'm talking to kids about gun violence and how we need to look at new ways of diffusing situations. So I think there's a way out of this discussion, but I think it starts by bringing people to reality on the street when violence occurs of how many lives are shattered, and that kind of tragedy requires a response.
No, that's a great insight. Now, I know you've identified in the past that part of the problem that we need to address is that we need to help people, that the primary cause of gun violence is simply from guns being put into the wrong hands, be that criminals or people who are suffering from mental illness or who are simply scared. You've implemented a comprehensive citywide program to at least address youth violence, so I was hoping you could speak to that.
We're really proud of the work that this community has done together on youth violence prevention. In 2005 and 6, we saw a real surge in violence, especially involving young people, and we brought all of this community together. Chief Tim Dolan at that time and I brought together mayors and chiefs, and we really learned a lot, brought young people together, and we laid out a plan that really had four values. Every young person surrounded by a trusted adult, intervene at the first sign of at-risk behavior, rejuvenate our kids, don't throw them away, and attack the culture of violence. And there are a series of action items under all of them, some very complex, some very upstream, preventing teenage pregnancy, dealing with mental health intervention, et cetera, et cetera. And the key to all of that was this comprehensive approach. We're now in our fifth year. We've driven gun violence down dramatically among young people in this community. And it works. We've got further to go, but it's, I think, shown that a community can come together and own the fact that we are. Kids don't come out of the womb violent. We're raising them violent, and we've got to help them unlearn that culture.
Okay, well, I mean, obviously a violent culture is part of the problem. But, you know, let's discuss the mentally ill for a moment. How do we go about keeping guns out of the hands of the mentally ill? That seems to be a big problem, particularly in the case of a lot of these mass shootings.
Well, that issue is very much in my mind right now because we had a mass shooting in a workplace where mental illness, I think, was really a major issue there. And, you know, if I could do two things as a mayor to wave a wand and change, I would have no more teenage pregnancies and I would have a comprehensive mental health intervention system in this country. Those two issues tie to so much of what we do. And when you think about the issue of what type of chronic mental health is being untreated with people on the street, when you think about adding on to that, people in my city that have that has very successful immigration from many places as a place that's welcomed people from war-torn areas, but they've come through war, and they're facing deep trauma and shock, and it has consequences. And you look at a kid in a violent neighborhood who's seen violence and what they learn, all of those things are part of this whole mental health system where we have people go to doctors when they get a cold so they don't get pneumonia. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to find out the equivalent of that on mental health.
All this stuff seems great, but it also seems sort of costly, and considering the economic climate we're in, how do you sort of marshal the public to get them engaged and willing to support these sorts of initiatives?
Our youth violence prevention initiative really didn't take much public money. What it really took was a public-private civic resolve to bring all the forces together. The very first thing we did was to go out in the community and say, a lot is happening right now. Let's just align it, and let's align it along goals, and let's put out of business those things that aren't part of this plan so that we can put resources where it is. And that's a message to government and funding communities and the private sector, laying out a plan, determining where the you really needed to move the dial, and then putting the money there didn't mean just shoveling more money into a system. Mm-hmm. It really had us try to say what's working and what's not, have everything tied to outcomes, and if it's not working, put it out of business so we can fund the things that are working.
Oh, now, all this sounds great. Certainly it sounds great at a local level, but my question is, how do you go about partnering or convincing state or national government? I mean, how do you push these sorts of proposals at the national level?
Well, I'm very happy that the Obama administration has adopted youth violence prevention as as a key outcome they have. We have just joined a collection of other cities that are working with the Justice Department on collective youth violence prevention initiatives. And we also here in Minnesota are working with a couple other communities. And I think all of us can and should be learning from each other. I'm happy that push is coming from the Obama administration, but I also think just peer-to-peer, city-to-city, more and more of us are talking together about how we can get these things done. A lot can get done by simply working the existing system, but I also think it's important for those in Washington who are involved in the law on this to not put up barriers, like the Tea-Hart Amendment, that with all the good work that's happening out here, it comes back to whether the federal government is going to be our partner, and in the case of the Obama administration's youth violence work, they are, or they're going to put up roadblocks because of rigid ideology, which to me is what something like the Tea-Hart Amendment is all about.
Okay, I'm sorry. Could you elaborate on the Tea-Hart Amendment for a moment?
The Tea-Hart Amendment has restrictions on what federal officials can share with local officials involving guns. Now, whenever there's a shooting in my community, the police chief, any police officer, they don't need to know what's the first question I'm going to ask. The first question I ask is, where did the gun come from? And the second question, especially involving youth, is who's arming our kids? And I want to know everything about that, and we should. The Tea-Hart Amendment makes it more difficult because if we're trying to track that, the path of that illegal gun, and notice I say illegal gun, when we're trying to track the path of that illegal gun, we shouldn't have some bureaucrat or congressman in Washington stepping between the mom who deserves to know who killed her kid and where the gun came from, and our police, and then those federal officials who are banned from giving us some information because of some law.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for joining me. Mayor Ryback's Youth Violence Prevention Plan has been responsible for a 66% decline in gun violence among juveniles since 2006. Just this month, he saw his new pick for Chief of Police, Janie Harteau, take up the duties of being Minneapolis's top cop. Theme music is Brass Beat by Covert, available for use on a Creative Commons license.